You are listening to Prometheus by Minute. I'm your host, Connor Colson. This is Minute 105. This minute begins with Vickers saying, "I'm telling you to take us home," and ends with a Prometheus taking off and preparing to collide with the Juggernaut. Yannick says he is preparing to eject Vickers' module. He suggests that she could survive for another 2 years inside it. And that's quite the conundrum. Of course you're taking that lifeboat if you're Vickers, but in this moment she doesn't know if there are any other engineer ships. It's an existential crisis. You're alive, but your life now has an expiry date. I think you would keep going only because you live with the hope that someone or something is going to come by and rescue you, no matter how remote. It's a bleak existence to find yourself in. On Earth, even if you are stranded on an island or in a desert, there's still the slim possibility of being found. On an alien planet, there's practically none. And the human psyche just is not made for that kind of hopelessness, not naturally. Vickers runs off to prepare to escape. I love her frustrated screaming. Charlize is just great at being an angry bitch. Meanwhile, Yannick, Ravel, and Chance prepare to sacrifice themselves. In this minute, it's clear Ravel and Chance don't have to be there, but they have Yannick's back. So, you're telling me they didn't have to die? Why write it that way? Now their sacrifice is basically meaningless. Or, I don't know. What makes a sacrifice more meaningful? The one you choose or the one you can't avoid? Or maybe they're making this choice because going out in a blaze of glory in an instant is preferable to the slow death stranded on LV-223. Death Stranding, accidentally. Didn't know I wrote that in there, but yeah. Good game, Death Stranding. There's one brief close-up on Chance where he genuinely conveys all the emotions I expect him to feel in this moment, and it's well done. I feel we needed more of that. We cut to Vickers running down the hall and furiously trying to get into her EVA suit. Like, sure, she doesn't bother with the outer layer suit. There's no time. Actually, aren't any in that room, anyway. I'm not actually sure what that outer layer does. Maybe it's more thermal and secondary protection. As in, you should wear both, but you can survive with just the one. I know I've already talked about them at length, but I do find them interesting, and I also find it as surprising that they made two layers to this costume at all. You know, how often do you see that in any movie or TV show? It's just generally too expensive and unnecessary. It was as if Janty liked both costumes and was like,
¿Por qué no los dos?
Yannick takes his place at the controls. He puts his cap on and begins to sing Love the One You're With again. I guess he's had that stuck in his head for days now. What is it? Well, I guess it's been a day. I think the whole movie takes place over the course of 2 days, so it's only been a day since he was playing his accordion. There's almost a ritual element to what he's doing here, like he decided, I'm gonna die with this cap on, and this is the last song I'll ever sing. I do think about that sometimes. You know, what's the last song I'll hear? What's the last movie I'll watch? What's the last thing I'll wear? I don't wonder what my last meal will be, because I can only eat meat and dairy, as I mentioned before, so it's really not gonna be a surprise. Although, who knows, maybe I will stop being intolerant to absolutely everything one day. For some reason, I'm convinced the last song I'll hear is Club to Death by Rob Dugan. I don't know, call it a dream or a prophetic vision, but I've just had that idea in my head for a while. It's a strange thing, though, that people across cultures place this importance on our firsts and lasts, and I'm not sure why we do that. Okay, so I have some questions about this next part. Vickers enters the escape pod room and suits up. The escape pod launches at the same time her module is deployed. The module doesn't so much land as go careering into the nearest rock. Now, why are there only three escape pods for a ship this size? Why did she need to suit up? Why can't she stay inside her module? What is the point of an escape pod on top of a detachable module? That's a pretty stupid escape plan if you need time to repair like that. Accidents don't generally give you a head start. Why did the module crash? Shouldn't it have been capable of landing automatically? In terms of plot, even, it doesn't really matter if it can fly or not. It's not like there's anywhere to go. Why is any of this happening? This is bothering me more than the scenes that usually bother people. This is yet another aspect of the character warehouse clear-up. If Vickers had been in her module, she would have been fine. Except, hang on. No. Remember, there's a goddamn giant murder octopus in there? So, why not let her fight it with the axe? How come Shaw is the only one who gets to have any fun around here? I've long wondered how else I would have killed Vickers off, and it was just, it's right there, all along. That's the most obvious solution to this problem. You know, she's not fussing around with a spacesuit. You don't have the module and an escape pod and all these extra elements. It's streamlined, it's logical, it ties all those elements in together. It's almost like the story naturally presented a solution, and they're like, nah, we're not going to do that. We're going to take a sharp right turn away from it. I checked in the other scripts, and Vickers isn't treated much better there either. In Engineers, she's killed by Fifield, kind of ironic given that in the final film, the roles would be reversed. In Paradise, she is crushed by the Juggernaut in exactly the same way it happens in the film. Although it doesn't specify what direction they're running in, just in case you were wondering. Straight line, sideways, zigzag, who can say? I really like the idea of Vickers meeting her end by the trilobite, so I decided I wanted to novelize this hypothetical scene. Here we go. If you'll indulge me. I mean, you indulge me every week anyway, so what's a little more? I've been doing so much creative writing lately, I think I have hypographia. Send help. Vickers was furious. Furious at her total loss of control, and furious at Yannick for taking it from her. This is what she got for allowing herself to get close to someone. He had betrayed her as everyone else had. Would he have been more inclined to listen to her if she had maintained a professional boundary with him? Probably not. But the fact that they had hooked up and he ignored her authority made it sting all the more. Yannick was going to die. He was choosing to sacrifice his own life. She hated that she cared. How dare he do that to her? It's not that she didn't care about Earth. It's not like there was anywhere else to live except a few backwater colonies on Mars and a number of other moons and planets in the solar system. But surely there had to be another way to solve this problem that wasn't quite so destructive. There wasn't enough time to give it much thought. She raced down the labyrinth of halls to reach her module. When she reached it, she found it looked as peaceful and pristine as ever despite what was going on around it. She took a seat in her white leather chair and breathed a sigh of relief. She had made it. While the rest of the crew would be expected to scramble into EVA suits and launch themselves in coffin-sized escape pods, Wayland was against reducing himself to something so undignified, so the suite had been designed to be a kind of larger escape pod, completely self-sufficient, at least for a couple of years. It started to dawn on her what that would really mean, and it made her claustrophobic. She braced herself as a module came down for a rough landing. It really wasn't designed to be ejected so close to the ground. Still, no significant damage had been done according to the readouts. Vickers got up and headed for the tiny viewport in the door of the module. She reached it just in time to watch the sky ignite as a Prometheus crashed into the alien ship. There was nothing left of her ship, but the alien one remained in one piece and crashed to the ground with an earth-shattering thud that reverberated through her module. The immense structure began rolling like a loosed hubcap. It rolled her way and she panicked. She was trapped. But the circular ship moved on, missing the module by only meters. Meredith released the breath she had been holding. She wondered where Shaw was. If she had survived, they would be stuck with each other until they died. Not a thought she particularly relished. Her thoughts were interrupted when she heard a wet, dull thud in the med room. She grabbed a nearby axe and cautiously headed for the door. Through the window, she was met with a sight that turned her blood cold. It was Shaw's fetus. Only now it was 100 times larger than it had been the last time she saw it. Meredith cursed her father under her breath. Why didn't they contain this thing? Why not kill it when they had the chance? They could still have studied a dead sample. It was all the same. At least it was safely contained behind the door. There it would remain until it died of starvation. She could wait. Only, now that it sensed her, it began putting all its weight against the door. Much like an octopus, it searched every crevice, trying to get to her. Vickers stood at the ready. It looked like her choices were kill or be killed now. She just hoped she would at least be faster than the creature. There, it found the slit between the doors. It pulled its tentacles in and soon it pried the heavy doors apart. Meredith began hacking and slashing wildly, but she was soon overwhelmed. She ran to the other end of the module. Now she got a good look at this thing. It was enormous. How on earth did it get to such a size? What had it been eating? There was nothing here, but, well, honestly, a lot had happened in the last 6 hours. Maybe some crew members did go missing, and no one had noticed. The creature wasted no time pursuing her again. She raced around the room, her speed and agility the only thing working in her favor. She swung the axe with as much force as she was capable of, and got a few mean hits in. A few tentacles were cut clean off, but this only made the creature angrier. Vickers climbed on top of the piano and launched herself at the monster, aiming for the center of its body, hoping for a killing blow. She landed with the axe buried deep inside the alien's back. It writhed in pain and rolled over. With the last of its power, it grabbed Vickers and drew her close to its horrid, fanged mouth, surrounded by a series of suckers. The suckers extended and drew her face in. Vickers screamed and fought with everything she had, but it was not nearly enough. Finally, the mouth opened to reveal a large proboscis. "Oh God, no," she cried as the proboscis finally jammed itself down her throat. She felt something solid being excreted into her esophagus. The creature seemed to relent now, having gotten what it wanted. It didn't want to kill her, nor eat her. What was it doing to her? What was she incubating inside of her now? Vickers was running out of air. The proboscis was blocking her airways. Her struggling became weaker as the monster shriveled up and encased her. They died together. There, wasn't that fun? That's a good use of your Charlize Theron. Let her be a badass and fight something. All she got to do was torch Byfield, which was cool, but we needed more. As for the rest of this minute, Chance tells Ravel that if you think the bet's off, you're wrong. Just a reminder, because I forgot too, this is what the bet was about, quoting the Alien Anthology wiki here. As the ship arrives at the surface of the planet, Ravel and his co-pilot Chance make a bet for $100 about the mission either being a terraforming or archaeological expedition. When the truth of their mission is revealed during the crew's briefing, Ravel refuses to pay Chance as he reasons that Chance never made a bet about finding ancient aliens. Oh, by the way, Ravel is Benedict Wong and Chance is the other guy. I don't know, he's in Game of Thrones and Force Awakens for 5 seconds. I often get them confused with each other, so I thought I would help you out if you struggle the same. I guess it's because it's always Ravel and Chance. I've never needed to know which one was which until now. Anyway, I think Ravel's being unfair. These were not the terms of the bet, so the bet is off. Alright, that about covers it. This is Coulson signing off. You can find me on Travian Designs, TRAVAAN, or Alien Prequels by Minute on Facebook. If you'd like to become a Patreon supporter, you can head on over to patreon.com/TraviaDesigns. Thanks to Mark Bodo, Tariq William Eltcart, and Simon Haynes, and Gray Malkin.